Hello. So today we are doing fairness, one of the central debates in AI and information technology ethics, hotly disputed in many ways. We will be looking at some of the main cases and, of course, covering the significant ideas. We will start with this case. This is a case that I worked on myself. It involved a German company making something called XAID, Explainable Artificial Intelligence Dermatology. What all that means is they were involved in the area of using artificial intelligence to read images of skin lesions. So as you see the image here, there's a picture of a man's back, and the back has various skin imperfections that the artificial intelligence is analyzing the image of the back. Someone just takes a picture of the man's back, feeds that picture, it's a high resolution picture, of course, into artificial intelligence, and the model returns the image you see, which is first it identifies all of the lesions in the back, then secondly it identifies the white lesions as benign, as not threatening. The yellow lesions are those which are about which the machine is uncertain, and then the red lesions are those in which the machine is leaning toward and a diagnosis that it at least should be looked at carefully by a doctor, or in fact may be skin cancer. So this kind of diagnostic work, reading images, reading lung x-rays, we've talked about that. This is something that artificial intelligence today does extremely well. In fact, there are some areas of medical image reading and diagnosis where the artificial intelligence actually beats human doctors, and that the diagnosis of skin cancer is getting close to being one of those. Of course, it's hard to compare perfectly, but certainly the power of AI is very palpable in this area. However, one truth is that the artificial intelligence diagnosis and reading works better on those with lighter skin than darker skin. More or less, the lighter the skin, the better it works. The darker the skin, the worse it works. There are a couple reasons for that. One of the reasons, and perhaps the main reason, is of course just lighter skin. White reveals much more than darker skin black. White is all color. Black, pure black, would be absence of color. So you have, in the lighter skin, it reveals to the photographic image, any photograph of a lighter image will reveal more subtle differences in skin color. And those differences in color are the subject of the AI analysis. So simply, anything which is lighter, whiter, doesn't matter whether it's a person or something else, any image analysis is going to work better on a lighter or whiter kinds of objects than darker ones. Our own eyes work that way too, right? But the darker it is, the less well we see. So for that reason, the machine the machine does work much better on lighter skinned patients than darker skinned ones. There is also a second reason people believe why the lighter skinned patients get better results from the AI, and that is because there is more training data. How does the AI learn to recognize something that is cancer and not cancer? Well, the way it does that is it takes a set of pictures of backs or skin or whatever you're going to have. In this case, we will say pictures of backs. It takes a set of pictures of backs, and a dermatologist goes through and circles first everything which is an irregularity, a lesion. And so the AI, with enough different cases of these back photos, begins to recognize, this is a lesion, and this is not, and this is not. So in that way, the AI begins to recognize where it should look. Then the doctor also applies the same labels that we see in this picture. The doctor writes, well, some of these are lesions, but they are clearly not skin cancer, so they are white. Some of these lesions, the doctor is not entirely sure, so they are yellow. And then those marked red, those are cases where the doctor either is certain that they're this is skin cancer, or at least is certain that this will require a biopsy. That is, it will require that you take an actual sample of the skin and have a chemical analysis done to determine whether or not it is skin cancer. Now, the lines can be drawn in slightly different places, right? Is it certain that we should have a biopsy, or is it certain that it is cancer, and so on? Those are more technical questions. What's important for our purposes is just that's the way the machine learns. I don't like to use the word learns, because that implies the machine is somehow human and learning like you and I learn. It doesn't, it's not human. It does not learn like you and I learn. Instead, it becomes capable of recognizing patterns, right? Something that looked like skin cancer in data set 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 also looks like skin cancer in the case of this new image, which we are feeding the machine from some new patient. Let's say me, just take a picture of my back, show it to the machine. All the machine does is it says, look, that lesion on Brousseau's back fits into a pattern with these other lesions in data sets 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, etc. That have been classified or labeled as skin cancer. So I suspect the machine says, not I suspect, my outcome is that this is skin cancer for Brousseau too. Just making this up, of course. All that to say that since the machine works by learning from pictures, images that have already been labeled, it follows, not surprisingly, that the training data or the learning the machine does is tilted toward the kinds of patients that have already been treated. Now, if you look in countries where there's a lot of artificial intelligence and a lot of advanced healthcare, one thing you notice is that those countries also tend to have a fairly heavy balance toward lighter skin or white skin people. Therefore, not surprisingly, the training data overall, of course, there's differences here and there and so on, but the training data overall that has been used for these machines is lighter skin people. Result, the machine tends to work better on lighter skin people because that's what it has been practicing on. The same thing, by the way, is true in healthcare ethics generally for a number of reasons. This is not the place to go into them. There tends to be more data about men than women, tends to be more data about lighter skin than darker skin, tends to be more data about certain age groups and so on. So you can find across many different sort of ranges, demographic ranges, gender, age, race, etc. You can find many different levels of performance that the machine has. And these different levels can be traced back to just the kinds of people that tend to have their pictures taken and have them analyzed by doctors. So the result of all this is that there are two reasons why the AI skin cancer detector tends to work better, or does not tend to, it does work better for lighter skin patients than darker skin patients. One is because it just works better. It sees better, like you and I do too, like everything does. Sees better where there's more light, where it's whiter, not blacker. And the other is because there's more training data for the lighter skin patients. Now, the first question I have for you in this discussion of fairness is, well, the result of all this is that the machine works better for lighter skin people than darker skin people. Is this a problem? And if so, is there a solution? Now, most people who look at this will say, yes, this is at least initially a problem. Most people agree that we do want our healthcare technology and our healthcare systems and most systems and so on to work evenly or equally well for people of all races and genders and ages and so on. So it seems like if you find a clear disparity in performance between, in this case, races, then something is wrong, right? Then you have an unfair performance of the machine. Now, of course, if you're going to be purely scientifically, of course, it's true. The machine is literally not discriminating against races, right? It's just the skin color itself. So there's a kind of a progression of skin color. And as the skin gets darker, it works less well. So I mean, if you happen to be someone from Ireland who normally has very, very white, creamy skin, but you've lived all your life in Puerto Rico, so your skin is actually quite dark. Well, the machine from the suntan, well, then the machine will not work very well on your skin. So it's not exactly race, but the effect in the world and what ends up happening generally is that it cashes out that way. Generally, it works better for whiter people than for white people than black people, and better for white people than brown people, better for brown people than black people, and so on. So, yes, it does appear that there is a fairness problem here. And is there a solution? Well, you can just see if these are the causes, there are one part of the cause can be attacked, the other part cannot. The technology, just like, as I say, our own eyes work better on lighter things than darker things. We can't change biology. Training data, however, we can change that. We could intentionally boost the number of images that have been used to indicate to the machine how it should diagnose skin cancer. We could boost those images from darker skinned people. How could we do that? Well, I mean, one simple way is to go to places where you have a large number of darker skinned people and do the pictures, do the diagnosis, feed that into the machine, right? Very directly, you could end up with a set of training data in which you have an equal number of images of, there's actually, skin tones are actually scientifically divided into six categories, right? From, say, the Irish white to deep, deep black, and I guess what it's the four in between there. So you could perfectly, with some expense and with some effort, but you could accumulate a training data set which had the same number of images for each one of these six classes of skin color. So that part of the problem can be addressed. Now, there is some expense linked to that activity, right? Obviously, the easiest way to get training data is just to take the images which have already been photographed, which have already been labeled as part of just the normal medical practice, just take those and feed them into the machine. That's cheap, which is good. But the problem with that is that's what leads to this imbalance in performance, or that's part of what leads to the imbalance in performance. Because you have more of the lighter skin images, it works better on lighter skin people. So, conclusions. One, is this unfair? Most people would say, yes, this looks unfair. Two, is there a solution? There's at least a partial solution that would cost some money and some resources. But yes, you could at least partially address this problem by adding training data for on the darker end of the spectrum. Okay, now, I want to stop there for a second and say, okay, so far, so good. This is a pretty standard fairness presentation. I suspect that everything I've said more or less makes sense to most people. It seems right that we do want our healthcare devices to work equally across skin types. And it just seems not surprising, given the way the industry works, that there would be some imbalances in the way performance occurs because of the people who are treated in areas where artificial intelligence is most advanced. So sounds like we've got a clear problem. Sounds like we've got a pretty clear solution, at least partially. We could act to balance the training data toward the darker skin end of the spectrum. Good. Now we come to the important part. There is a catch. Here is the catch. The catch is that skin cancer risk and occurrences rise with whiter skin. That is, the whiter your skin, the more likely you are to get skin cancer. So here I have, you can see here, there is this, the Fitzpatrick scale, which are the six skin types. This is the scientific segregation of skin tones across global population. And you can see on the top that the darkness increases as epidermal melanin increases, which we don't care about. But what we do care about is just underneath that at the bottom, it notes the cancer risk is declining. You can see it's declining very clearly. So now, wait a minute. The whole fairness discussion that we had previously twists a little bit, because I naturally, and I think most people would naturally think that people of all races are equally likely to get skin cancer. And therefore, that's why it's unfair that the machine works less well for the darker skin than the lighter skin. But what happens if this truth is true, and that, in fact, the lighter skin members of the population are much higher risk than the darker skin population? Now, all of a sudden, someone might step back and think, well, wait a minute now. If this group is at a higher risk, then maybe the machine should, in fact, work better for this group than the group at lower risk. Maybe that makes perfect sense. And maybe the reason there isn't this so much training data for darker skin patients, and of course, this is true, this is part of the reason, is because there just aren't as many patients. I mean, if the darker your skin, the less likely you are to get skin cancer. Then it follows, if the population skin segments are more or less equal across the universe of the total possible patients, then it follows that, of course, you're going to have less training data for the darker skin, because less people are getting sick to begin with, right? So now we have a real twist in our logic. It was easy before to say that the situation was unfair, but now with this new information, does it still seem unfair? And here I can give just sort of an extreme example of a kind of argument you might make to say, well, you know, actually, the way it is in fact fair. As it turns out, I did not realize this, as it turns out, in the discussion of this case, it emerged that while women, of course, get breast cancer in 99% of the cases, men actually also can get breast cancer. It does happen in something like 1% of breast cancer cases are actually just normal guys who get breast cancer in that area of their chest. So you have, in the area of breast cancer, you have the same kind of disparity, but much more extreme than you have in skin cancer. That is, all of our technology, all of the steps we take as a society to try to halt breast cancer, are aimed at women, right? I go to the doctor never says to me, well, you should go have a mammogram, right? But if we were going to treat men and women purely equally, then in fact, the doctor would have me go get a mammogram, because it's true, even though my risk is only 1%, of that of the woman who comes into the office after me, right? Even though my risk is 1/100th of her risk, I still have the risk. So if we're going to be treated perfectly equally, then the whole system should be rearranged so that both men and women are going to get mammograms and so on. But of course, we don't do that. Why not? Because it's a huge waste of money, right? And we have limited resources in this world. If we were going to use half of our mammogram time to take mammograms of guys, right, that would be a giant, it would not be a waste of resources, because we would save some men's lives, but would be a giant mismatch of resources, because if we used those same resources all of it on women, which is what we do. We just say, guys, you're out of luck. If I get skin cancer, bad luck for me. You know, there are no mammograms for me, no free mammograms, no government programs, etc. That's what we just say as a society. We say, guys, if it happens to you, you're out of luck. Bad luck. Why do we do that? Not because we don't like guys, but instead because it's just a waste of resources. The chances of finding cancer, breast cancer in me, are, again, 1/100th of the chances of finding it in the woman who's standing next to me in line. So what do? Well, we just say, look, we are going to concentrate all of our resources on females. No one objects to that. It seems perfectly fair. That's, in essence, what is happening here in this case, except it's not so extreme, right? In this case, it's not 1% versus 99%. It's a much closer sort of blend, but it's still the case that we are distributing healthcare resources in the area of AI now. We are distributing healthcare resources equally, not in terms of skin color or breast cancer, breast cancer. We are not distributing resources equally in terms of what the color of your skin is or whether or not you can get breast cancer. Instead, we are distributing resources in terms of how likely you are to get either skin cancer or breast cancer. And because guys are very unlikely to get breast cancer, that's why we send all the resources to women. And in this case, the argument can be made because the lighter skinned people are much more likely than the darker skinned people to get skin cancer, then the resources should be tipped toward the lighter skinned people, which in fact is where the resources are tilted now today. Similarly, of course, for breast cancer, the resources are tilted toward that group that is much more likely to contract the disease. So that adds sort of a curious wrinkle to the story, right? So we started out with the idea, it just seemed unfair the way things are, and it seems like we should make certain changes to even the playing field, but now that's not so clear. It seems now as though we could, of course, maintain the previous argument, but now we have different arguments that could be made. We could say that instead of fairness means that quality healthcare is distributed equally across the different skin types. We could instead say healthcare AI, skin cancer healthcare, should be distributed in terms of risk. So the higher the risk, the more accurate, or the more resources of artificial intelligence should be dedicated to you. So I'm a fairly light-skinned guy. I should get, the machine should be optimized, let's say, to work for someone like me, as opposed to someone who was very dark-skinned. Again, not for the reason of race, but instead for the reason of vulnerability. So when you talk about fairness, now we can bring this into focus. When you talk about fairness and the distribution of resources, whether it's breast cancer screening or skin cancer screening, there is this large question about the language or about how you evaluate what the distribution is based on. Should it be based on gender? For breast cancer, we say, no, forget that. It should not be based on gender. No, actually, I got that wrong. It ends up being, let me say that differently. Yes, I'll stick with that. Should it be based on gender? No, it shouldn't be based on gender. Instead, we say it should be based on vulnerability. And for that reason, gender differences arise, right? So that's the way I wanted to say it. It's not based on gender. It's based on vulnerability. And for that reason, gender differences arise. So too for skin cancer. You could say on the one side that we should base the argument of fairness on skin color, and therefore we would say, well, it should work equally well for all skin colors. Or we could say instead, fairness should be based on terms of vulnerability. The more vulnerable, the more resources, and that may end up creating differences in the level of care for people of different skin color, which it does. So fundamental question, what does fairness mean? Does it mean that we treat genders equally? Does it mean we treat races equally? Or does it mean we treat vulnerabilities equally? You can make the case for all those things. A reasonable person could argue yes or no to each one of those cases. But what's important for this class is that you understand, or this session where we talk about fairness, what's important for this session is that you understand the fact that you can make all those different arguments. Fairness is a very blurry AI ethics principle, because it's hard to know exactly what we are trying to be fair about. And in almost every case which is disputed, many cases are not disputed. But in almost every case which is disputed, the source of the dispute is not so much, sometimes it's a definition of what fairness is, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. But frequently, the dispute is about what we should be fair about. Should we be fair in terms of skin color? Or should we be fair in terms of vulnerability? Should we be fair in terms of gender? Or should we be fair in terms of, again, vulnerability? In the first case, vulnerability to skin cancer. In the second case, vulnerability to breast cancer. These are hard, hard questions. And so that's what I'm putting here in yellow. Should disproportionate resources be dedicated to the spectrum's darker end to ensure equal AI accuracy across skin tones? Which resources, how much? Or going the other way, should disproportionate resources be dedicated to ensure that higher vulnerability gets more resources? Now, everything I've said up to now is sort of the basic look at fairness. There is kind of an extreme view that some people have. And we've talked in this course now about autonomy, dignity, privacy, and now we're into fairness. One aspect of this discussion is normally we have been trying to balance these different principles. We've said, well, in a certain case, say in the case of the COVID tracer apps, we've said, look, on one side, there's a privacy concern, and that would tend to argue against using the COVID tracer app. But on the other side, there's a social well-being concern, and that would tend to argue in favor of using it. And we've sort of left the discussion there. We've said, look, ethics frequently confronts us with these kinds of dilemmas, and we kind of will wrestle with them individually in the specific cases when we get there. But it's also possible, and I wanted to take this moment now that we've got a good number of theories on the table, it's always possible to be very focused, right? Or some people might say somewhat extreme, or very dedicated, have quite a bit of zeal, or maybe be a zealot, depending upon how you see it, in favor of one or another principle. And so there, privacy is one of those where there are some people who say, look, privacy must be guarded above all else in information technology ethics, and all other considerations should be secondary or third or fourth or fifth in the fifth row of attention. Really, privacy is everything. Another one of those principles that tends to gather some advocates who are extremely devoted and who want to say even that we should, to a significant extent, only be concerned about this specific principle is fairness. So there are strong advocates of fairness who say that that one way of looking at the world must trump all the other ways of thinking, and must not only trump them, but dominate them, right? We have to be fair profoundly before we even begin to think about anything else. And one example of that is my friend, smart guy. His name is Vince Medai. He is in Berlin. He is a medical doctor. He worked with me on this case, and he and I had a little disagreement. He says first, he takes the position that the fairness question in terms of the diagnostic power of AI tools, that question should be answered as equality in this case, in terms of skin tones. So we should not have the machine tilted to work better for those people who are more vulnerable. Instead, we should have it equalized so that it works with the same accuracy and with the same success for people of all skin tones. So that's his view of fairness. Fair enough. Good way to start. But he goes further then. He says also that because fairness is so important in our society, that we should stop using the artificial intelligence skin diagnosis until we have gotten enough training data to be certain that it's working more or less equally well across more or less every skin tone, right? So we should, it's not just that we should work to bring things up to an equal level, it's that we should just stop using it until we're sure they are at the equal level. So that means some people might get inferior treatment or might die because they did not have the advantage of using this system, which is right there and can be used. He says, yes. Yep. Fairness is that important. If some people die, some people die. What we need to do, regardless, again, because fairness is so central to the human condition, is just stop using the machine until we have basically what he says is we should just spend whatever money we need to spend to get the training data. And we could do this. I mean, it's something that is not a crazy, this is not a, by any means, a crazy suggestion in practical terms. It's perfectly possible for governments or healthcare agencies generally to pool their resources and do some work in this area to make sure the machine works equally well across from the lighter to the darker end of the spectrum. Perfectly possible. So we could do that. But as I say, that the interesting part of his argument is that fairness is so important that we must stop using the machine until we have done that. So the question there is, there's kind of a larger question about fairness. Well, now, is it fair to be fair? Let's just assume for the sake of argument that we agree with his point that the fairness should be distributed equally across skin tones. Let's just take that, we agree, as opposed to being distributed in terms of vulnerability. So it's distributed across skin tones. We accept that. But is it then, and that's what we're going to count as fairness, but then is it fair to, like, lighter skinned people like me to not use the machine until we have it working for everyone? It certainly is worrisome for someone like me, right? I mean, it conflicts with my autonomy, right? It limits my ability to perhaps be cured of a disease. So I can make an autonomy argument against that. I can say to Vince, look, we have an opportunity to boost my autonomy, I'm a lighter skinned guy, by giving me this screening and perhaps saving my life from cancer. So even though I might say, it's not fair, we should still use the machine because it increases human autonomy. So there's that argument. But what about the fairness argument? Is it fair to me to not use the machine until everyone has an equal diagnostic accuracy? Yeah, I think probably it is. He certainly thinks that. I'm not sure if someone has an argument against that in terms of fairness, I would be interested to hear it. But I think he can make his case reasonably. As I say, it depends upon that first step. That is, he says, look, fairness is so important that it supersedes completely, not just all other principles, but almost all other considerations. So you do have to buy that. And most people don't buy that, but you do have to buy. If you buy that, then you can probably get all the way down to his conclusion. Now, there's a second question I have here, too. This is purely theoretical, but is it possible for the machine to be perfectly fair across skin tones? And this is the argument that I ultimately used against him, and I think it's right. And even if you agree that it should be that way, it's simply not possible theoretically. The reason it's not possible theoretically is because you always have to start with one piece of training data, right? And you can't magically have 1,000 pieces of training data for every skin type. Of course, in practical terms, you can do that. This is a purely theoretical argument. But theoretically, when you train the machine, you do need to train it with back image first. You just can't put them all in simultaneously. It doesn't work that way. It has to be sequential. So if that's right, then the machine is going to be unfair just by definition, right? It's going to be unfair because it starts unfair. It starts by having whatever color that first data set was. So it seems like if the machine starts unfair, then unfairness is a condition of the possibility of having the machine. So just the fact that we have the machine implies that we are accepting that it's not going to be perfectly fair. Of course, we will always work to make it fair by one definition or another, but we are accepting from the inception of the machine itself that it will not be perfectly fair. And therefore, we should use it even though it is flawed. We should use it as long as it generally helps improve autonomy or something. Now, that this is a very, this is kind of a rabbit hole argument. You're not responsible for that argument. But I just wanted to round out the way this discussion went. It was a very theoretical and very extreme discussion, kind of thing that academics do. But in the real world, most people do not say that we should stop the machine from working where it works until being sure that it works everywhere. And in the real world, the main debate is between those who want to say, look, we should understand the distribution, the fair distribution of artificial intelligence health resources in terms of vulnerability, or those who say it should be instead in terms of some other factor, which could be race, it could be gender, could be height, age, it could be anything. So fairness, I think that we can wrap up this this initial discussion. What is the value of fairness? How can it be described or measured? I think the value of fairness on the human level, we will talk theoretically next, but on the human level, right, the value of fairness is something like this sensation you would have if you find out the machine does not work as well for you as it works for some other people. For example, maybe the feeling, I had kind of a strange feeling when I found out that men could get breast cancer. And of course, I realized immediately that none of our society's resources are dedicated to preventing me from getting breast cancer, which is okay. It makes sense. But there is sort of a feeling of being left out, right? That's the human experience of fairness. The sense that you're left out unjustly from some kind of opportunity or some kind of prevention of a disease. How can it be described or measured? I think we've described it. Measuring it is difficult, but we've said you can measure fairness in terms of vulnerability. You can say, look, we should decide that people should have equal vulnerability to a disease. Equal vulnerability to, let's say, dying from a disease. Within the context of AI healthcare, which means that the tool will be tilted toward those who are most vulnerable, or instead it could be measured in terms of race. That is, the machine should be equally accurate for people in different races, or gender, or what have you. Okay. So that's fairness, sort of the human side of fairness, and now we will move on to the theoretical consideration of fairness. You can see the first thing I did in this case is I asked ChatGPT to make an image of what, well, I put the instruction here, please depict the concept of fairness in artificial intelligence. That's what ChatGPT gave me. I kind of like that little light bulb up on top there above the scales. I'm not entirely sure how helpful this is. It looks kind of like there's some notion of equality. That makes sense, of course. Fairness means treating people equally in some sense, but we don't know whether it's in terms of vulnerability or skin color or what. And then it's kind of strange that it has that, right, the brain versus the people, or the artificial intelligence versus the people. It's kind of like fairness means the computer should be treated equally with people. Not sure. Anyway, that's the picture. Let's see how ChatGPT define fairness in AI ethics in less than 50 words. Let's see what ChatGPT has to say for us. Okay, well, as usual, we get nothing from ChatGPT. So fairness and AI ethics refers to the development and deployment of AI systems in a way that ensures they do not perpetuate bias or discrimination. All right, so in other words, fairness in AI ethics refers to development and deployment of AI systems in a way that is fair. Right? It's just repeating itself. And treat all individuals and groups equitably. Well, as we've seen just from the example we've already had, that's not it. Right? Fairness is not just treating all individuals and groups equitably. That's impossible. What we saw in the previous example is we cannot treat people equitably simultaneously in terms of vulnerability to skin cancer and skin color. We cannot treat people equitably simultaneously in terms of gender. We cannot treat people in terms of breast cancer equitably simultaneously in terms of gender and in terms of vulnerability. It's just impossible. If we treat men and women equally in terms of preventing breast cancer, we are treating them unequally in terms of their vulnerability. So you have to choose. So fairness is not treating everyone equitably. It's about deciding where that equitable treatment will exist. Is it about race? Is it about vulnerability? Is it about gender? Depends. Okay, so ChatGPT, we are, as usual, unhappy with ChatGPT's performance for us. Let's move on to the philosophical definition of fairness. Philosophically, the definition of fairness has been set now for 2,500 years. It hasn't changed. It comes from Aristotle, so this is ancient Greek, or ancient Greece. I think Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. And Aristotle's idea is that equals should be treated equally and unequals proportionally unequally within the decision domain. We'll talk about that over the next few slides, but let's just start with this quick example of two people, kind of an exaggerated example of a tall person and a tall guy and a short guy, it looks like. And we have this question of fairness, which means treating people equally and unequal and proportionally unequally within the decision domain. The question is, well, what does that mean? What it means, at least as a quick example, is that if we are talking about, let's say we are talking about hiring people, and if the hiring happens to be for a basketball team, then we have a very tall person and a very short person. And if you know anything about basketball, then you know that being tall is a big advantage in basketball. So in this case, this would be a case where you would say that you would want unequals to be treated unequally. If you were going to hire someone, you would hire one person and not hire the other person. So they're treated unequally. And you do that because they are unequal. The person who's tall is probably going to be a lot better at basketball than the person who's short. I mean, at least, right, if this is the difference, if it's that extreme, then you can be pretty sure that this taller person is going to be much, much better. Right? So this is a case where fairness, the definition of fairness is that equals should be treated proportionally unequally. And in terms of basketball players, it means we should be more likely to hire this person. Let's say if it's proportional, I would say this person is about 10 times as tall. So we should maybe pay the taller person 10 times more, or be 10 times as likely to hire the tall person than the short person. That's fair because unequals are being treated proportionately unequally. It's fair when you are forming a basketball team to select the job applicants who are the tallest. Of course, that's fair. That works well for basketball. Unequals should be treated unequally. But now let's change and imagine that instead of hiring basketball players, we are hiring lawyers. Well, in that case, height, at least presumably, doesn't make any difference, right? How do lawyers work? Lawyers work the same way that I'm working now. They sit at a desk and they make arguments. It's just that their arguments are not about philosophical ideas. their arguments are about legal concepts and legal precedents and so on. Now, one thing you'll note about me sitting down and doing the work I'm doing now, which is a lot like lawyers, is that you don't know how tall I am, and you don't care. It makes no difference. My performance as a philosopher, like what my performance would be as a lawyer, has nothing to do with how tall I am. In fact, as I say, most of the work is done sitting down, so you can't even tell how tall the person is. So in that case, if you are looking to hire between these two people, the tall person and the short person, if you're looking to hire one of them as a lawyer, you just have space for one person on your team. In that case, this would not be a situation where you would treat unequals unequally. Instead, you would treat equals equally. You would say, look, the fact that they're both tall makes no difference, so I'm equally, right now, for me, hiring one or the other is just a coin flip. And that would be, if you have no more information than that, if you're making a hiring decision for a law firm and you only know that one of the candidates is taller than the other candidate, you don't know anything else about what they studied in school, what their experience is, you don't know anything else, then the fairest way to make a decision is just to flip a coin. Whereas, as I say, by contrast, if it was basketball, you don't need to flip a coin. You know what to do. So the idea is that equals should be treated equally within the decision domain of law, right? It's just a coin flip. Which one do you pick? And unequally, that's also part of fairness within the decision domain. So if it's basketball, you choose the tall person, of course. Now, just like everything else in this world, when you start looking closely, things become more complicated. And there's this question about if you're hiring someone to be a manager. And I put that there because there are articles, that academic articles, serious articles, that suggest that people who are tall perform just slightly better as managers than people who are not as tall. You can read, I have a specific academic paper cited there, The Height Leadership Advantage in Men and Women, Testing Evolutionary Psychology Predictions About the Perception of Tall Leaders. Now, you can say that's good or bad, that people who are tall are perceived, according to this article. Like, I don't know if it's true, but people who work in this field seem to think it's true. That if you have people who are otherwise equally, the person who's taller is perceived to be a better manager or leader. Let's just put that proposal out there. Now, if that's the case, and fairness means treating unequally and equals equally, should you then hire the tall person as a manager instead of the short person? That's a really difficult decision, because purely rationally, objectively, it should not make any difference, right? I mean, of course not. Being a leader is just like being a lawyer, unless you're talking about being a special case, being the leader of a basketball team, right? That's different. But I mean, being a leader in a kind of a law firm or in a philosophy classroom, in a place where height doesn't make a direct difference, in that case, is it fair to privilege people who are taller? Or as I say, if the research went the other way, then you would privilege people who were not as tall. The specifics don't matter. Difficult decision, as I say, because on one hand, objectively, you should say that, no, we're going to flip a coin between these two, because there's no objective reason why someone who's taller should be a better manager. On the other hand, if the research tells you that that's the way people perceive the reality, then if you're a hiring manager working in a company and you have two people who are exactly equal in their application, same education and so on, but one is taller than the other, would it be fair to hire the taller person on that basis? I'm not sure. This is a class in AI ethics, so we're not going to dwell too much on this. If this were a course in business ethics, we would talk about this for like a week or something. But what I'm trying to show is that it's not just the idea of AI ethics in healthcare, which is vulnerable to disputes about how exactly opportunities should be distributed. It's more generally in the area of fairness itself. Just like all these theories, when you look carefully, there are a lot of blurry areas, and it's hard to draw clean lines about what is and is not fair. But I want to now go back into the area of information technology ethics and AI ethics, and we have this definition, right? So that's what fairness is. Treat equals equally and unequals proportionally, unequally within the decision domain. Now, here is a definition of fairness from a real academic paper in 2021, right? Recent. In the context of decision making, fairness is the absence of any prejudice or favoritism toward an individual or group based on their inherent or acquired characteristics. Thus, an unfair algorithm is one of whose decisions are skewed toward a particular group of people. Okay, so fairness is the absence of any prejudice or favoritism toward an individual or group based on their inherent or acquired characteristics. That's how fairness is defined in this academic article. Think about that for a second, or two. Is that correct? Does that make sense? Fairness is the absence of any prejudice or favoritism toward an individual or group based upon their inherent or acquired characteristics. What does that mean? If you take that seriously, what does that mean for this in basketball? According to that definition of fairness, the one we see right here, and it's published in a real journal, Survey on Bias and Fairness in Machine Learning, in the ACM Computer Survey, number 54, this is a serious academic journal. Serious people, could that definition work here for basketball? The answer is no, right? If we cannot show favoritism toward an individual based on inherent characteristics, that means we are disallowed, if we are hiring for a basketball team, we are disallowed from hiring the tall person instead of the short person because that's an acquired characteristic. Excuse me, an inherent characteristic. One is taller than the other. But of course, we have to be allowed to draft a tall person before a short person. If not, then how can we ever decide anything, right? All decisions would just have to be pure coin flips, right? Fairness would just mean that no matter what decision we had, we would just flip a coin. So if we were going to decide, in essence, it would come down to if we're going to use the AI skin cancer recognition technology on you, we'll essentially just flip a coin and say, heads, we'll use it on you, tails, we won't. Well, that makes no sense, right? No one wants fairness to just be flip a coin. Though it's true, that's fair, right? The lottery is perfectly fair. When you flip a coin, if there's two of us, we both have the same chance of winning and losing, but no one wants that, right? No one wants fairness to be that blunt and that stupid and that mindless. And we want fairness to help us do things in the world. We want fairness to help us say, look, if you're hiring a basketball team, then it's fair to hire the tallest people in the room. If you're hiring lawyers, then it's fair to hire all those people in the room who went to law school instead of the people who went to philosophy school like I did, right? I mean, if you're going to hire a lawyer and you have someone who went to law school and someone who went to philosophy graduate school, which of these two should you take? Well, this is another case of equals treated unequally. I mean, of course you take the person who went to law school, because within the domain of law, this person is better than I am, of course. And the same thing would go the other way if you were hiring a philosophy professor. Well, of course you would hire me before the lawyer. Within this decision domain, I'm better trained for this job. So going back to this definition, if they say, look, we cannot show any prejudice or favoritism toward any individual or group based upon inherent characteristics like their height, that means basketball teams can't hire. Or acquired characteristics, that means law firms can't hire people who went to law school. It makes no sense. Thus an unfair algorithm is one whose decisions are skewed toward a particular group of people. Again, this clearly makes no sense. An algorithm which is choosing basketball players is fairly and, of course, going to skew toward people who are tall. An algorithm that is choosing lawyers is clearly and, of course, going to skew toward people who went to law school as opposed to engineering school or some such. And that's what fairness does. It helps us distribute inequalities unequally. Right? We hire some people and not hire other them and not hire others, but we do that fairly when we do it in accordance with their particular impersonal inequalities, right? The fact that this person went to law school and the other person did not go to law school. So why am I showing you this? I'm showing you this first as a way to sort of test you and get you sort of thinking in terms of the definition, treat equals equally and unequals proportionally unequally within the decision domain. But I'm also showing you this because if you're in computer science and working in fairness, there is a lot of work to be done. I'm making the point here that treating unequals unequally is usually or frequently, more frequently than not, the way fairness works is you treat equalies unequally, right? You're hiring some people and not hiring others. So that's the point I'm making there. But the main point I'm making is here's a Google Scholar search of that definition of fairness. And it turns up in many, many articles, which means that if you're in computer science, there is a lot of work to be done here. I mean, a lot of real articles in real journals are just wrong, and fundamentally and deeply erroneous. You can fix that, I mean, just by taking this class and learning what the correct definition of fairness is. It's treat equals equally, not equals proportionally unequally within the decision domain, as opposed to this. Just that little bit puts you above all these other people. So in the area of AI ethics is one where this whole field is so new. There is a lot of room for people like you, for anyone right now today, to make a big difference. And here's a perfect example. This is a reputable journal. These are reputable people, and they're completely wrong. Okay, so that's the idea of fairness. The last thing I want to do is make sure that we really carefully describe what this means that fairness exists within the decision domains. I've already begun to explain that, right? This idea that treat equals equally and unequals unequally within the decision domain. We've already started by saying, look, one decision domain is hiring for a basketball team, which means we hire the tall person instead of the short person. Another decision domain is hiring lawyers, which means in that case, we don't do equals unequally. In that case, we treat equals equally and we coin flip. Here is another example within healthcare. Skin color within the domain of image analysis, but outside domain of emergency calls. When you are considering how well AI ethics works, for its patients and whether it works fairly, it is reasonable, though you don't need to, but it is reasonable to consider skin color as a proxy for vulnerability. It's reasonable to say that, look, we should have equals should be treated unequally. The people who are most vulnerable to the disease, whether it's skin cancer or breast cancer or something else, the people who are most vulnerable to the disease should have the most resources dedicated, artificial intelligence, healthcare resources dedicated to helping them with that disease. So again, in breast cancer, we dedicate almost all the resources to the things for women. So too, you would say in the analysis of skin color, since the lighter skinned patients are more vulnerable to skin cancer, the AI health tool should be tilted in that direction. So it makes sense. Of course, you can argue otherwise, but it makes sense to say that skin color is part of what you consider when you allocate healthcare resources in skin cancer diagnosis. That's part of the decision domain. It's part of what makes a difference when you consider vulnerability. Whereas by contrast, here's another case I worked on. In this case, an artificial intelligence was listening to emergency calls along with a human operator. And the artificial intelligence was lighting up a red light when the artificial intelligence suspected with a significant degree of confidence that the patient being discussed was having a heart attack, because that's an especially acute kind of emergency and requires immediate aid. The dispatcher, the 911 dispatcher, has to stop asking questions and get them help right now if it's a heart attack. So it's important that dispatchers recognize quickly when calls come in that are requesting help because someone is having a heart attack. And I'm not going to go into the whole technology, but in this particular AI technology, a voice analysis software was used to listen to these calls. And you can see in the case of the red circles, in those cases, the AI technology understood that it was a heart attack more rapidly than the human operator did. In the case of the blue bubbles, in those cases, the human realized that it was a heart attack before the AI. In this case, now, what's important about this case is for a heart attack, skin color makes no difference. So when you're considering fairness in with respect to this emergency call technology, fairness is, skin is not part of the decision domain. It should not, there's no reason why I would enter into the way you are thinking about how well the technology works. Whereas there is a reason for thinking in how well it will enter into the way a skin cancer technology works. In the case of the emergency room calls, the decision domain that you would consider would be something different. It would be something like the language that people are speaking and so on. But the idea is, for fairness, is that when you are considering people to be treated equally, as equals treated equally, or as unequals treated unequally, those applications should be done within a decision domain that includes the characteristics which influence directly the decision. So again, basketball, if the decision domain is basketball, then height is part of that deciding, so it should be included. If the decision domain is hiring a lawyer, then height is not part of that decision domain, so it should not be included in your considerations. So treat equals equally and unequals unequally, and that equal or unequal treatment occurs within a specific decision domain, which might or might not include height or skin color and so on. Okay. So that's the full definition of fairness. Treat equals equally and unequal proportionally unequally and within the decision domain. The last thing I wanted to say is there's just very quickly, fairness is one of those ideas. It's very old, right? I mean, humans, it's one of the first things, kind of ethical differences that humans are going to have. Are they going to be worried about fairness? Makes sense. And so it's worth noting that in some sense, the earliest fairness is for some people the historically earliest ethics. And one example for that is this idea, right? The so-called lex talionis, the idea of retributive justice in the Bible and even preceding that in Babylonia and other places. If I recall correctly from my history classes, there was the idea that justice is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Well, that's just Aristotle's idea of equals being treated equally, right? If you put out my eye, then fairness means I will put out your eye. And if you steal $100 from me, then you should give me back $100 and so on. So that's there's kind of a historical basis to fairness, but that's not important for our class. Okay, good. So we've talked about a case of fairness at some length, right? This artificial intelligence analysis of skin cancer. We've talked about a definition of fairness, Aristotle's, at some length. Why don't we take 5 minutes to answer the question about how resources should be distributed when medical AI performs better for one group of people, but those people are also more vulnerable to the disease. In other words, why don't you sort of form your own reaction to the question we had about how this disparity in accuracy and in performance of the dermatological AI, how that should be managed. Okay, so we have the AI analysis of skin lesions. We have the definition of fairness. Now we're going to look at some cases, specific cases in hiring. Then we're going to look at some general issues about group and individual fairness and representational fairness. That's what the session looks like. And let's dive right into the hiring algorithms. So here's another real fairness debate from a private company that uses artificial intelligence to screen job applicants. This is technology which is used with increasing frequency now by large companies that are getting a large number of applicants for jobs that are too many files and resumes and things for people to efficiently manage, or it would cost a lot of money to hire a lot of people to look at all that stuff. So they are trying to use artificial intelligence to do at least some preliminary culling of applicants. The idea is that artificial intelligence can take I'm just making these numbers up, but take, let's say, every 1,000 applicants and cut that down into a pool of 100 people. And then human beings in the human resources department can start to look through that 100. Now, there are a lot of different ways that artificial intelligence performs this culling, this limiting. And one way is this company called Retorio. And what they do is kind of interesting. They ask applicants to make a video of themselves talking for 5 minutes about themselves and why they think they would be good for the job. The directions are fairly general. People should just talk. I can't recall if it's 5 minutes or 3 minutes, but some short period of time about themselves and the potential job. And then the applicants, they would do that video just like I'm doing this video, right? I have my computer set up. I film myself. Retorio says, look, if you feel like it's going off the rails and you're saying things you don't want, happens all the time. You've seen me talking in this class. Sometimes I start saying things, it's going off the rails. And it's, no, wait, I didn't mean to say it that way. I meant to say, if you're doing this for a job, the company says, no worries, just delete the video and start over. You can make as many videos as you want on your computer. And when you are happy with your video, just upload that video and we will analyze it and send the results to the company. So that sounds good, right? I mean, people have control over their own video. They can do whatever they want. At least to me, it sounds initially very, very fair, right? People can just, as I say, they have full control over what the video will look like. So, let's put it in Aristotelian terms, equals are being treated equally, right? Because everyone, well, now we have a problem. Now I'm thinking, maybe it's not fair because some people don't have the same technology. So that's a question, right? It might be it's not fair because some people don't have the same technology that others do to make the videos. But leaving that aside, let's just say that everyone has access to the same technology. It seems like then in that case, that it's pretty fair, right? People just make their videos when they're happy with it. They do it as many times as they like. When they're happy, they upload it. And then it gets analyzed in terms of these qualities. These are different people have different names for these qualities, but these are sometimes called sort of the big five human psychological characteristics. I guess I can't recall what the term is exactly, but it's something sometimes I call the big five character components or something. Well, different people have different names, but it's always something like this. There's a measure of your openness. There's how easily you speak about things. Conscientiousness. They're trying to measure whether or not they think you will be kind of show up for work on time. Extroversion. Your ability to speak about your ideas with others. Agreeableness, and neuroticism. Kind of how worried you get about things. So there are these five qualities that can be graded. And for many hiring companies, this is kind of an initial screening. They want people who do well on these qualities. That means they score highly for the top four, and then their score drops because you don't want people to be too neurotic, right? So in this case, the yellow scores far better than the blue, right? They're higher in all the good qualities and lower in the bad one. Okay, up to here, everything is good, right? But if you look carefully at this picture, you will see that this is the same woman. And in fact, she is an actress. And in fact, she is memorized her speech and gave the same speech twice and uploaded the results to the machine. There was only one difference. In one speech, she wore her hair as you see it on the without a headscarf. That's the blue line. And in the other case, she wore it, her hair wrapped up in a headscarf. You see that in the other picture. And presumably, she did say the same thing in more or less the same way, with the same background, at the same time, right? She just did one, then she did the other. She's in every other way dressed in the same way. The only difference appears to be this headscarf. And this headscarf created this large difference in her score in this hiring algorithm. So wait a minute. The question is that fair? It seems weird. Most of us, I think, would say it seems odd that someone should get a higher score just because they happened to show up for the video interview that day with a headscarf. But maybe here's another example. Same kind of difference, but now instead of being a headscarf, they had the same, I believe in this case, it was literally the same exact presentation. That is, they had a kind of a green screen behind the person. And for one version, they changed the green screen color to white and uploaded that video. And then in the other version, which is the same guy saying the same thing, it's literally the same video. They just, in the green screen, they replaced it with a bookshelf and said, okay, so in this case now, there's no room for saying that maybe the actress, when she was wearing a headscarf, maybe she felt slightly more confident or slightly more comfortable, or maybe it was because she wore the headscarf second, so she had some extra practice. Maybe there was some other explanation for why she scored better with the headscarf than without. But in this case, as I recall the experiment, it's exactly the same. It's literally the exact same video, the same guy, just with the green screen replaced by different colors. And we see again the same result. That is, when you put a bookshelf, all of a sudden, the score is much higher in the four positive characteristics and much lower in the negative one. Or to state it slightly differently, the bookshelf version scored a lot higher than the white version, according to the artificial intelligence. Now the question is this fair? And the definition of fairness, we know, is that people equal should be treated equally and unequally within the decision domain. Now in this case, the individuals are exactly equal. The only thing that changes is the books. So the question we have is, well, should that be part of the decision domain? People who want to say this is unfair will say, look, this is unfair because you have the same guy saying the same thing, and the machine gives different scores depending upon the background. Well, that's not fair. The background is just there. What matters is the guy. But other people will say, well, wait a minute now. You know, deciding your background, even if it's not an explicit decision, even if the person did not intentionally put the books in the background, right? The fact that someone happens to have a lot of books in his or her house, maybe that corresponds well with how they will do in the job. So maybe in that case, the computer was right to say, you know what? The fact that this person has a lot of books, that's a good sign. Let's give that person a higher score. The question then is, again, going back to this notion about the decision domain, the question is, should the books be part of the decision domain? Should that count when you are hiring individuals? Same thing with the headscarf. Should that count? On one side, again, it's very easy to say no. What counts is simply sort of the pure performance of the person, not these extras like headscarves and bookshelves and stuff. It's what they say. But other people will say, you know what? The clothes you wear, the books you have, that tells us about you just like your words. So the question, ultimately, is what counts as the decision domain for fairness in hiring? What should the machine consider? What should it be allowed to consider? Should we say, if we're going to regulate our AI, or if you are going to make an artificial intelligence to do this kind of hiring, should you code the machine so that it excludes the background? We can do that easily, right? We see the technology today. You just push a button and it takes the subject and it just removes the background. Should you do that in order to make your software fair? Or is it the opposite? Should the background be an important consideration when you decide to hire this person instead of that person? Either of those two stances, right? Either one can be defended. But what's more important than that for this session is that you understand why we are discussing them. We're discussing the bookshelf because it's part of this question about whether it should be included in the decision domain of hiring. And maybe that would depend upon the job. You might say, look, for someone like a lawyer or for that kind of task, which relies quite a bit on reading, maybe the bookshelves should count. By contrast, if you're deciding on hiring a basketball player, maybe in that case, the bookshelves should not count. It's a hard questions. Now, I want to refine that case. We've had the headscarf, we've had the bookshelves. I would like to refine that case with just kind of a special question here. This question of glasses. I'm asking, are glasses different? And I mean, are they different than the bookshelf or the headscarf? Why am I asking if glasses are different? I'm asking that because, to a certain extent, glasses are not a choice. Right? If someone, certainly a headscarf, clearly is a choice. When you sit down to do an interview, you are making the choice to either wear a headscarf or not wear a headscarf. So on those grounds, it becomes very reasonable to argue, well, then of course, the headscarf should be part of what the AI considers when it considers your job application. Same thing with the books. But here, I mean, the glasses, I don't have a choice. I mean, I have to wear glasses, otherwise I could not see the camera. I would be looking around or something, who knows. But maybe glasses are different. However, it's also true in some other experiments. Curiously, in this one, it's the opposite. In other experiments I've seen, people score more highly with glasses instead of scoring, having an inferior score. In this case, her score is higher without glasses than with glasses. But it's the same question either way. Because glasses are not a choice, because glasses are something that some people just have to wear, but that don't usually affect your performance, unless, again, maybe since we're talking about basketball, it might be that in sports or something, you are better off not having to wear glasses. It might actually affect your performance. Contact lenses maybe just don't work as well as people who can see 20/20 on their own. I don't know. But you know, for most jobs, like a lawyer and so on, whether you wear glasses makes no difference. So the question is, should glasses be allowed to make a difference in the AI grading of the candidates? Again, because the applicant it's not really a choice. The headscarf is a choice. The books are a choice. But glasses are not really a choice. Or maybe they are. It's hard. That's another of the, there's no answer to these questions. But these are the kinds of questions you will face if you're hired someday by a company that makes these artificial intelligence hiring screen tests. You will have to make a real decision about whether or not in the training data, in this case, what you would do, if your training data showed you that the AI was giving slightly better scores to people without glasses, then what you might do to be fair is when you had candidates who did wear glasses, right? You might adjust their scores up a little bit. You can see from this, you would give them slightly better scores in more or less across the board to give them higher positive scores and lower negative scores. And you might do that. You might say, look, it's just fair because we do not want to distinguish people at all in terms of whether they wear glasses or not. Since the AI is doing that, we don't know why it's doing that. It just is. We can compensate and make the machine more fair by boosting the scores of people like me who wear glasses. And then you would say, however, we will not do that in the case of the books or not, because the books, that's a choice people make. So that reflects who they are. It reflects the decisions they make. It's not an inescapable reality. Or not. Or maybe you go the other way, right? Maybe you say, look, people have the choice too. They could take their, I could take my glasses off and do this. I could wear contacts. Or maybe it's true, people who wear glasses just don't do as well at some things. It could be. We don't know. So there's a lot to think about. that was hiring. That was note number one. Note number two. This is a computer science professor, Katharina Zweig. She says the fundamental problem with face recognition by machine learning, and we could add in the case of hiring algorithms, is that we never know exactly which pattern in an image these machines are responding to. In other words, what she's saying, look, the problem with these AI hiring things is that we don't know if it's really responding exactly to her words or if it's responding to the headscarf or something else. In this case, it looks like, since it's the same exact video, it looks like it is responding to the books. But in most cases in the real world, in real life, we don't know. Since there's only one video, we don't know exactly how much of a benefit it's giving her for the glasses or glasses plus hair down. Maybe if it was glasses plus headscarf, it would be different. We don't know exactly how the machine makes its choice. So there's a question. Is this a fairness problem in the hiring case where the machine trained to mimic human response? what am I saying here? I am saying that what Retortio, and that's the name of the company that produced this, what Retortio says is, we do not promise, this is important, we do not promise to provide you, the hiring company, with the 100 best candidates. We promise to provide you, the hiring company, with the 100 best candidates that a human being would select as the best candidates, right? That's different. That's really different. Because what Retortio is doing is they say, look, we had 2,500 people, they had people rate individuals' videos in terms of these qualities. And from that, we learned how to do our rating system. So what their algorithm tries to do is it tries to imitate what humans do. So the question is not exactly, does the book in the background make this person a better candidate? What the AI is saying is the books in the background make human observers think this is a better candidate. That's what the AI promises. It does not promise to tell you who's a better candidate or not. It promises to tell you what humans will think. Regardless of whether they're right or not, humans are wrong about lots of stuff, obviously. So maybe humans are completely wrong, but the AI could be right. I mean, maybe books don't make any difference. But if human viewers think books make a difference, then the AI is right, is doing what it promises to do. Because what it promises to do is mimic what humans do, not tell the perfect truth. So in that case, right, the fact that we don't know what the machine responds to, I mean, in a certain sense, it doesn't matter. All that matters, at least this is, I'm taking the Retortio side now for a moment. All that matters is that the results that Retortio gives are the same as the results humans would give. That's what they promise. And maybe that's what they do. And then one reason I use this picture here and used it like this is because I think the humans make these same kind of judgments. When I told you this was the computer science professor and this is what she said, I mean, I intentionally chose a picture which showed her in a position of it seems to me anyway, in a position of established expertise. She seems to be at some kind of conference. So other people are gathered there to listen to her. So people must think she's pretty smart, right? I must think that. And she's dressed nicely and formally. So it would appear to be a kind of a formal or important conference. It's not like she's just standing in the lunchroom talking to people. So it looks like a significant and important conference that she's been probably invited to. It looks like she's dressed formally, so she's taking it seriously. And it looks like the kinds of things she's saying, other people have decided are important. I think that when you see a picture like this, well, I will just speak for myself, but I think this is true generally. All of us make all kinds of associations like that. And even before we're looking at what she says, we're already deciding whether or not what she says is worth listening to. If this was just her standing in a lunchroom in jeans and a t-shirt saying the same thing, you know, I bet we would take it much less seriously. So what I'm trying to say is that when humans decide how well people are qualified to do something, like talk about AI, one thing we look at is the background. Of course we do that. So if we do that, then maybe it's fine that artificial intelligence does that. Maybe it should do that. The people who did this test, this was a German TV station that did this test. And what they were trying to show is that AI fails. They're saying, look, this is ridiculous. The same person giving the same talk with and without a headscarf gets different scores. That makes no sense. They were saying, look, this is ridiculous. With and without books, different scores. That makes no sense because it's the same thing they're saying. But maybe it does make sense. Maybe that's the way human beings make decisions. And so maybe the AI doing the same thing is successful, not a failure. Hard to know. But it's all part of fairness, because if you want to hire people fairly, then you need to understand why you're hiring them, right? I mean, should you be hiring someone because they put books in their background or not? I don't know the answer, but I know that to be fair, you at least have to entertain the question. And you have to entertain that whether you're a human being just doing normal stuff or whether you're programming an AI to do that. If you're programming an AI to do that and you want to be fair, you need to attack head on the question. If it's counting the books as a plus, should it be doing that? And maybe yes, maybe it should. That's the way humans do it, but maybe not. Okay, so that was one case, one hiring case. Here's a different hiring case. And this one is also a real case. It involves Amazon. Same thing, right? Amazon is one of these companies that hires all kinds of people, too many people every day. They're hiring people. It's too many for human beings to keep track of. And so they do an initial screening with, or they try to do an initial screening with artificial intelligence. And here's what happened. Their machine did not work. It did not work because Amazon, like Facebook, Apple, Google, Microsoft, etc., has a lot more men than women in its workforce. So what did Amazon do when it was training its algorithm? Amazon looked at its own workforce and said to the computer, essentially it took kind of the profiles of everyone in their workforce, like male, 50-some, white, PhD philosophy, and then female, 40-some, black, PhD in sociology, and da-da-da. Now you can do that at Pace University with all the professors, just line us all up and put our information in. That's what Amazon did. They just lined up all their employees and put the information in to the machine and said to the AI, look, find us people, more people like the ones we have, right? Here's what it looks like. There's a whole world of applicants. Which people who are in that applicant pool are like the people we have working here? Because those are the people we want to hire. We don't want to hire people who will not fit in. We want people who will fit in. And one good way to test for that is to see if they're like the people who are here. Makes perfect sense. Theoretically, why not? Here's the problem. There are more men than women at Amazon, like these other companies. And so the software started giving a plus to applicants who were men. The software just said, look, If you want to find people to work here who are like the people you already have, well, overwhelmingly, or to a significant degree anyway, those people are male. So if we have two applicants, a male and a female, and they're identical in every other way, well, then we should hire the guy. Right? And we should, because that looks like, and it appears to be from the data, what Amazon does. This was a gender bias problem they had in their program, and they tried to get rid of it because obviously they don't want that, right? They want the best person for almost all tasks, and maybe it's to clean the bathrooms. Maybe you want one or the other, but for almost all tasks in Amazon, right? You don't want to be choosing people because of their gender. You want to be choosing them because of how well they will do a specific task. So what they tried to do is they said, look, our software is favoring guys, and we don't really want that. So let's take out the male-female distinctions from the job descriptions. But it was impossible to do. Why? Because being male or being female has all kinds of proxies that are really difficult to eradicate. That is, we may take off from the data the fact that I'm a man. But let's say that I went to a high school, which was all male high school, or the woman next to me went to a college, which was an all female college. In that case, the computer is going to be able to, this is called a proxy, is going to be able to figure out, well, if this woman went to Smith College, well, then I can figure out that's a woman. And if this person went to St. Mark's High School in Dallas, that's an all-boys school that I happen to know of, well, then the computer can figure out I'm a guy, even though it wasn't told that directly. So the AI, it turned out, was really smart, so to speak, in that way. Amazon kept trying to deny it information, but AI kept figuring out by some sideways method which gender people were. Maybe it had to do with things like what their favorite clothes were, their favorite meals, who knows. But many women are different in a lot of ways, and computers find all those ways. And the problem Amazon had is it could not unteach its computer those things. Their software kept recommending men before women, and ultimately they were unable to make the software work, and they had to discontinue its use. The point I make here is past data bias creates future prediction bias. What I mean by that is, in the past, Amazon has hired more men than women, and then, so therefore, if you're going to teach a machine to predict who should be hired in the future, well, if it's a good machine, it's probably going to predict more men. Not because you want it to do that, but just because a good machine is going to find some way to identify people in the future who look as much as possible like those in the past. It's what the machine does. Right? It's not like human. It can't say, well, I don't want to count that factor. I mean, the machine just says, I count every factor I can find. So that's one point to make. And there's also a second point to make. I mean, this problem is really ineradicable because the machine is doing what it is supposed to do. You can see that in this case. Imagine that you just replace the word male, and if you look at the top line Amazon, with tall male, and female with short male, and Amazon, you're not hiring for Amazon, but you're hiring for a basketball team. Well, in that case, you would say, look, if you want an AI to hire players for a basketball team, one of the first things the artificial intelligence is going to notice when it gets all of the qualities of the people, one of the first things the AI is going to notice is that, well, wait a minute, it seems like this basketball team is hiring a lot of tall people. Seems like it's more tall people than short people. And that's good, right? As we've been saying. For a basketball team, of course, that's what you want it to do. Right? That's what it is supposed to do. It looks at the successful teams now. He says, oh, look, the teams that are successful tend to have a lot of tall people. So if I'm going to hire people to be successful in basketball, I'm going to look for tall people. That's good. That's right. And structurally, that's the same thing that happened in the Amazon case. The machine did exactly the same thing. It's just that it did not work the way Amazon wanted for hiring Amazon, While, again, the same process would work the way, say, the Boston Celtics would if they were using AI to choose the players they would draft next year out of college. So the problem is not exactly the machine. The problem is how the machine succeeds and knowing in what domains or in what areas it might succeed and in what areas that same structure of action, that same behavior of the machine might cause problems. So there's this, I call this domain spillover. What I mean is that the machine is, the machine is not clearly marking what I mean is that it's impossible for the machine to know exactly what is part of the decision domain. Right? We've been talking about this the whole time through. Like, should the decision domain be about vulnerability or skin color or gender or what? When it comes to height, the machine doesn't have any way of knowing, besides the data, whether or not height should be included. It doesn't have any way of knowing, besides the data, whether or not gender should be included. Now, when you're hiring for a basketball team, the machine picks up on height and it includes it, and that's good. When you're hiring for Amazon, it picks up on gender and it includes it, and that's not good. But that's not the machine's fault. That's the human's fault. And in the case of Amazon, it was so intractable in the machine that they couldn't fix it. They just had to abandon the project. Okay, so just on these examples, there are some final points to make. The first is, number one, that the male-female proxies, this is a real problem with machine learning, that even if you say, theoretically in your mind, that you want, and then also in your coding and development and deployment of the model, that you want gender, let's say, just to take some quality, you want gender to not be part of how the machine makes decisions, it's really hard in the real world to take that or anything out because there are so many proxies. If you want to find out about me, like, you could find out my age, my race, my interests, my religion, my heterosexual, almost all kinds of stuff, you could find out about me, even if even if that data about me is not explicitly included in what the machine receives. If the machine sees things like I've been buying birthday presents for children, right, the machine is probably going to think, oh, there's a pretty good chance that guy is married to a woman. Pretty good chance he's a heterosexual. Pretty good chance. If the machine sees that I'm teaching philosophy class, the machine's probably going to figure out, well, he went to philosophy graduate school and things like that. It's extraordinarily difficult in the real world to clean data in the sense of removing the capacity for the machine to make judgments about things that we don't want it to judge, right? Maybe we want the machine to judge without reference to my age. It's really hard to do, right? Because as soon as the machine finds out that I have children who are in college, boy, that tells you a lot about my age. As soon as the machine figures out that I graduated high school in 1987, that tells you a lot about my age, right? So it's hard, right? And that we could say the same thing about race, about religion, about all kinds of other stuff. We give a lot of ourselves away in our secondary data. So it's very difficult, even if within the area of fairness, you have a positive sense about what you do not want the machine to consider. You don't want it to consider race, let's say. It's still really hard to do that because there are lots of proxies for race out there. Then the next point is, we talk a lot about fairness for the kinds of things that we are accustomed to talking about because they're visible things like gender and race and so on. But for machine learning, remember, it is going to it is going to find all kinds of invisible ways to be unfair too. For example, the example I have here, let's say in this Amazon data set, there's more male than female, but let's change that and say, let's say that the all of these are, the light blue is last names that begin with A through M, and then the dark blue is N through Z. So it just happens that there's more people with the name A, last name starts from A through M than N through Z. Well, as human beings, we know that makes no difference, right? If I get two applications and one is from Mr. Morris and the other one is from Mr. Norris, right? I'm not going to make any distinction there. But the machine, AI, it will see that distinction is just as important as a height distinction for a basketball team. All the machine knows is that there's more people with hired with M's than with N's. So there are all these kinds of silent sort of unfairnesses that can exist in machine learning because there are these patterns that exist that human beings, we would just not even pay attention to them, like what the first letter of your last name is. And of course, over the whole universe of people who are being hired, those things will balance out, right? In some companies, there will be more people with last names that start with N, and in some companies, more last names will start with M, right? So in the whole universe of companies, everything is fair. But in any particular company, it could be that just for some statistical reason, it happens that Amazon has hired hardly anyone whose last name begins with M. So the machine learns to not hire people whose last name begins with M. And this could go on for years before anyone would even notice, right? And who would even think to look for that, that no one is being hired with the last name of M? Maybe many years down the road, the human resources person would say, look, you know, it's really odd that there's no one whose last name begins with M who works at this company. I wonder if that's a problem with our machine learning. Well, yes, it is, right? But another problem with fairness. So you can see fairness, there's all kinds of AI problems. The first is it's really difficult to know what is fair and what is not fair. Two is once we've got a decision about what is fair and what is not fair, it's really hard to implement. And then three is there's all kinds of scenes of potential unfairness that we don't even see, that are completely invisible to us. The machine, because the machine doesn't think like a human being, it may end up discriminating against people whose last name starts with M, just because that's a statistical anomaly in the company. Now, all of us agree we don't want that to happen, but none of us are going to look for that. None of us are going to suspect the machine of doing that. So if that happens, there's a question, well, is that fair or unfair? I mean, in one sense, it's certainly unfair, right? Let's say my last name is Brousseau, so if I apply to work in Amazon and I find out later on I didn't get the job because the algorithm for some reason was not hiring people whose last name was B, I'm going to think that's pretty unfair. But on the other hand, it's kind of fair in the sense it was just random, right? Randomness is fair. Like the lottery is fair. If we all buy a lottery ticket and one of us wins and the rest of us don't, we end up being treated very differently, but it's perfectly fair, right? Someone wins, the rest of us don't. You're happy, you won, you're happy. The rest of us lost, we're unhappy, but it's perfectly fair. Maybe that would be the logic here too, with these proxies. Maybe we would say, look, it's too bad that the company's AI excluded people whose last name started with B, that's unequal treatment, certainly, but it's fair in the sense that it could have happened to anybody. It's like a lottery. And so maybe this time it happens to you and it's negative, but some other time it will be someone else. So maybe it's like a lottery. Maybe it's unfair, but because it's random, it's also fair. Just keeps getting more and more complicated, right? So you can see that fairness in artificial intelligence is a real knotted mess. Why don't you just think about those questions for about 5 minutes? I kind of like that question about the last name B and this kind of accidental unfairness, or is it unfair? And that's a good thing to think about for a few minutes, I think.